Romy and David, thank you for doing this so quickly. Really am so appreciative.
You're welcome.
David.
All right, let's see if we have a quorum. We have three.
Are we gonna pop up on all the different screens? Let's see.
What do you mean?
I mean, are all the board members gonna be on different screens as you try and count quorum here?
Oh.
I see Josefina, I see Adrian.
Yumi, Diane.
I see Jason.
Okay. Oh yeah, there's Jonathan. Okay. Report out from closed session. There's nothing to report out. I'm going to move us now back to open session. If there is anyone who was not able to get in when we had the limit of 100 who would like to public comment, could you please put your name in the chat? The chat's at the bottom of your screen. Okay, so okay, Jordan Holly.
Hi, hello everyone. My name is Jordan Holly. I am alumni of OSA, a graduate of the class of 2013. So I wanted to come and speak to everyone and kind of give my two cents as to the few board meetings I've just been a part of, as I've just realized that they are happening. It seems like alumni tend to be a little out of touch with what's going on at our alma mater. And so I'm hoping that with us actually coming into board meetings and like town halls and actually speaking, that we'll get a chance to be more in the know of what's going on, as well as like providing insight as to, you know, just helping OSA succeed and become as great as we all know that it can be. With that being said, I think that there should be alumni representation on the board. I love that we have a current member of OSA, like a current student participating in board meetings. I love that we have parents, that we have a lot of like the chair people, and everybody that's here is like doing this because they care. And I think that the alumni do care, and we have a voice that we want to express, because we have a different, just a different understanding of how OSA worked back then. And we have insight that we could give, as well as just like, kind of just like working all together for one. Along with that, I just want to say that I hope that these Zoom meetings continue, not just in the pandemic, but that it makes it open to people that are not technically still living in Oakland, California. As I'm an alumni that currently lives in Boston, Massachusetts. And so having these Zoom meetings, I've actually gotten to be a part. With that being said, I also hope that the communication about board meetings and other public events for the community to be a part of, I would love to see those happen more often, or for it to be notified, and not just through the website, because it's not always accessible, or, you know, it's hard for us to find the information. So using the social medias that OSA already has established and in place, like having like those meet, like these meetings, the town halls posted, having the calendar that's on oakarts.org, possibly having it just like color coded or some way to truly identify like what each thing is. Right now, it seems like everything on the calendar is blue. So maybe having like events by emphasis, or, you know, board meetings that are a specific color, that help having those things kind of easier to find, and having the information on those. So I know that you guys post announcements, which I think is awesome. Also having that in the calendar invite. I think that those are just a lot of ways to get the alumni and more of the public involved in making OSA better. So thank you for letting me speak. I appreciate your time, and that's it.
Thank you. Ondine Young.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm a parent of a ninth grader, and I am a parent of a vocal 11th grader, and I'm here just to support the teachers. I know it's really a hard time for all artists and educators, but I really hope that they can get more sense of a security for where they're going to stand as soon as possible.
Thank you. Karen Morphin?
You're going to have to forgive me. Some of these have already been said. I was not able to log in. So a couple of things. I want to say that, first of all, that I support the teachers. Second, that I would like to hear from the board as to how they plan to fulfill Kava's position as she's leaving and the budget for that. How that is going to be implemented and displayed publicly. Third, that obviously it was this, what the board did today was a big mistake, or administration. We lost people in this meeting. We lost momentum. We lost participation due to this technical difficulties that you guys were all having. We were all well over 100, and we have not reached 100 now. So I really hope that you guys understand the impact that that has on the community, not being able to participate and be part of the conversations as they begin. That's all I'm going to say for now.
Thank you. Anyone else who was not allowed, wasn't let in, who would like to comment, public comment? Okay, I'm going to close public comment, and I need to take attendance again for open session. So, Diane?
Here.
Dwayne?
I see
him. I am here. I'm trying to get myself on mute. Sorry, Lisa.
That's okay. Jason, were you able to come back in?
Yes.
Okay, so Romy, for the minutes, Jason was in closed session.
And he also actually joined open session just before we went to closed. So Great. Whatever time that was.
Thank you. Wei-Ling?
Here.
Jonathan?
Here.
Elise, here. Steve?
Here.
Mike?
Yes, here.
Adrian?
Here.
Okay, so we have a quorum, and we are on to the student advisor report. Mr. Jones.
Right. Let's.
Oh, and I should have taken attendance for you. Sorry, Leon.
Well, you know, I'm always here.
Wow.
Okay. Miss Romy, can you allow me to share my screen so I can show my couple of slides? If not, I know you have access to them if you can share as well. Either way works.
I am going to ask David Smith, who is the host of this meeting, and to change that setting. Give me just one second.
Well, let me just first.
Leon, I believe you should be able to click share your screen because I believe panelists are able to do that. Down at the bottom, do you have that option?
Yes, it says host disabled attendee screen sharing.
Okay, let me look into that.
Okay, as I was saying, just want to state that before I became a board member, and even before I applied and ran for student body president, that I'm a student first, and that I also stand with the teachers. And I'm so proud of all the students that came out, especially Ty and Sarah that are here today that spoke in public comment. We all love our teachers and we want to keep them here. And if I can, if you want, as we're still troubleshooting, I'll just get sort of into and then show the visuals after. My presentation today was to simply explain the efforts to continue on planning graduation. We're planning to get the program finished by tomorrow. We have our second to last senior meeting, including the student elected speaker, where students, any senior that wanted to give a speech at graduation, could write a speech, record themselves, and then we as a class are going to vote on that next week. And of course, as graduation, you know, there are going to be awards, speakers. I'm so glad to hear that Miss Stacey A. Smith is going to be our commencement speaker for this year. Super, super excited to see her, hear her warm words as we go out into our career at post high school.
Sorry, Leon. Sorry to interrupt, but I believe you should be able to share your screen if you want.
Amazing. Thank you, Mr. Smith. All right, let's see. Perfect. Present. Cha-ching. All right, great. So back to here. As we're also meeting tomorrow to talk about technology, and this is actually chat. Miss Snyder was like, oh, this is actually a good test to figure out how this webinar feature works. Because we've been talking about technology and how things are going to operate for the virtual graduation, because there will definitely be over 100 attendees for that. And yes, so now on to my next piece. I know that a lot of the times when I come and give reports, I mention different clubs and the progress of them. And as of right now, since we are in May and in remote operation, a lot of the clubs are operating and moving into finding new leadership. And actually, this is the first year in OSA's history that all the affinity clubs contain graduating seniors. So the list that is here for you right now are all the students that are going to be taking over our major affinity clubs at OSA, BSU, Latinos Unidos, BSU, APISU, Women Color Club, and Brothers of Color. And one thing I also want to just note out is that Student Council for the past 3 years have had members of over the majority of being students of color. So as much as we have these amazing affinity clubs, we've also had representation in the student council in terms of having conversations around equity and diversity at OSA from a student's lens. Last but not least, the student council transition. As you know, I am graduating and going off to Dallas, which I'm super excited for, and it's time for elections. So at the end of the month, we will be electing in the next student body president, high school vice president, and middle school vice president. As of right now, we have one candidate for each student body president and high school vice president, and then four candidates for the middle school VP. Another thing, a part of these elections, I know I mentioned in previous board meetings, is the student advisory prerequisite in training. One of the candidates is actually here tonight observing me give this report as a support of making that smooth transition for me leaving OSA and them coming onto the board of directors, and also having them watch the meeting where we got our Brown Act training, because I don't really know when those trainings are implemented into the year. So I think it'd be good for that student that's going to take over to watch that so that they know everything around the Brown Act, including another thing I'm doing a part of elections are Friday informational sessions. So starting tomorrow, I'm just having open forums over Zoom for students to just know about student council and really just know what they're walking into. And last but not least, talking about that, our presidential teamwork. So we have a very, very strong leadership team when it comes to the student council, consists of the student body president and the two VPs. We've sort of made a transition into how this leadership would look like for next year based off of the efforts of what we did this year, but then also confirmation knowing that the student body president will be on the board next year. So the student body president is a self-governing role that's to support school pride and growing the life of the student community. And they're working with many groups, specifically the treasurer with financial growth, but also the student body, student clubs, administration, APT, and then of course here with the board of directors. And what we've done now is sort of put more leadership into the VPs by running the student council and really being leaders and presidents within the high school and middle school cohort. And if there are no questions at all from the board members. Nope, okay, well that concludes my student advisory report.
All right, I'll give you another second in case you had to take it off mute. Did anyone have questions for Leon? I have a quick question. So Leon, the people you showed us on the slide that showed the new students of color, the different affinity groups, mm-hmm. are those the current people that no, will?
Those are people that are taking over the club.
They're taking over. Okay, great. Thank you.
And I just wanted to quickly share that because I know we hear a lot about the president and student council, but it's a team effort at OSA. So I just wanted to showcase that to the board.
Great. Thank you. Okay, we now have the consent agenda. items. I believe we have, so let's go through, does anyone have comments or changes on the April 14th meeting? I think I actually have one. We need to list the three compensatory salaries, and so I think we need to add those.
Yes,
we do. Yeah, and Elise, this is Dwayne. I had one. When we came out of when we went into closed session, I wasn't counted in that, but you did identify me in the votes that we had in closed session, so we should have consistency there.
Okay. Any other changes to the April 14th minutes? Okay, and so the May 6th minutes, I think, Mike, you had a change.
Yeah, I just did flag the item regarding the PPP loan, which I guess was the only item. We should strike the sentence in there that says most charters are accepting the loan. The comment that was made was I was aware of many other charters who are, but I don't think it's accurate. I can't attest that most charters are taking the loan. So I would just like to propose striking that line from the minutes.
Okay. Any other changes to the minutes before we vote on them as amended?
I have an update to that same minutes as well. After my name, I'd love to add quotes. So Ms. Barnes quotes CSDC, just to clarify that.
She does not work there. She quoted them. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so would someone like to make a motion to approve the minutes as amended under the consent agenda?
Moved.
Second.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, can you state your names for the record? Who is moving and who is second?
So moved.
Dwayne Walton, second.
All right, let's take a vote. Adrian.
Aye.
Mike.
Yes.
Steve.
Yes.
Elise, yes. Jonathan.
Aye.
Wei-Ling. Josefina.
Yes.
Jason.
Yes.
Dwayne.
Yes.
Diane.
Yes.
Okay, motion passed. The minutes as amended are approved. Remote learning update. Mr. Oz. Mike, thanks for staying on. I know you've been on Zooms a large part of your day today, so thanks for hanging in there.
You're welcome. It's been that kind of week, and I'm totally fine with it. Kind of feeling the vibe. Maybe I should move kind of quick because a lot of the people I've seen in multiple meetings this week, and I probably got some of this information. So feel free to slow me down, but my intention is to kind of buzz through this. The last couple updates were a little more. I'm sharing my screen. Can you all see that?
Yes.
Okay, and my internet connection is unstable as I've had to go to my hotspot because my took a here. Remote learning, final stretch. And when I say final stretch, I guess I should qualify that as for now because the future is definitely unknown at this point, but we're just a few weeks away here from the end of the school year and it has been quite a couple of months. I put that picture there intentionally because I miss it. I want to go there every day and I needed a little nostalgia. The Fox has been a place where I've gone to work for many, many years. Even when it was closed, we were behind there and it's hard to not go there every day. So let me see. Community engagement has been great. We've been sending out comprehensive emails every couple weeks that have really detailed information around any kind of changes in programming and what's happening with different policies from grading to graduation to resources for students to tips for families and everything in between. The survey we sent out a couple weeks back, we did receive 288 responses, which represented a little over 300 of our students. It represents a larger number than the people that responded to account for the people that have multiple kids at our school. I'll share some of those results with you momentarily. We had our third OSA town hall earlier this week and had over 100 attendees, and we probably hit that limit too, so I'm glad we're upgrading Zoom to be able to get more. I love that we are learning new tricks of the trade that will continue after the quarantine situation, the campus closure, because I have no doubt we can better engage our community through online platforms. I love all the alumni that are here tonight, and I love just the access that this provides. Our APT put together a meeting last night. If my memory serves me right, it's all blurring together. It was a great meeting, and I commended them afterward. It had a beautiful, positive tone to it and was totally solution-oriented. And they had 50 attendees. And it with these three things all combined, we're hearing a lot from our community right now. And we also had a good turnout for Giving Tuesday and raised over $12,000, which enables us to purchase Chromebooks, which are becoming more and more relevant in the current situation. We have some updated grading practices. Our goal, I'm going to kind of paraphrase this, but our goal is to make sure that students don't face a downturn in their grade to campus closure. So one thing that we're updating is that students will not receive Fs for semester two. They will receive incompletes in the place of an F, and there'll be multiple opportunities to improve that grade. And also that students who have seen a decline in their grade from quarter three to quarter four will be given an opportunity to apply for their letter grade to be converted to a pass, no pass. This would not apply for the Fs because that would still stay as a no pass, which counts as an F. This would be for all the kids that have fallen from an A to a B, B to a C, and so forth and so on. And those applications are reviewed by the counselors and teachers if they choose to be part of that process. Finals, we've decided to make 2 weeks instead of one. It's not that finals are happening twice, it's that teachers can decide which week is best for their needs. The intention here is to have opportunities for credit recovery. Some classes would prefer to have them a week early so that they can use the week after finals to support the students who may have struggled on the finals and give them opportunities for revisions and credit recovery. Oh, and families who were at the town hall the other day, I got feedback, wanted a comprehensive guide as to the date and the content of all the finals, and that I'm intending to publish tomorrow. I'll get a note out to all families. The teachers have entered into a spreadsheet, and you will be able to quickly refer and be able to check all the classes so you don't need to dig through Google Classrooms. Survey results break down by grade level. You can see, as you might expect, we get the most with the younger kids and some fewer with the older kids. The weekly structured schedule, if you remember this chart from before, it's pretty similar. Five would be that it's great, one would be that it's terrible. This is a good curve. Obviously, we would want all fives, but this is where we're at, and we're pleased with the curve. The overall course workload, three would be ideal, one being way too little, and five being way too much. This is decent in terms of what we would hope for. We have fallen a little bit on the side of too much. We're doing our best to kind of constantly balance this. And see how we can meet those needs. Teachers are taking this information and adjusting as they see fit based on the data that they're gathering. Graduation and promotion, we've got a team of, I think about eight of us working on this right now, the virtual ceremonies. It's gonna be fun. I mean, to the best of our ability, we're gonna make this a real fun and engaging event. There's a website being developed by Ms. Schultz where you'll actually be able to kind of enter the Fox and look around in the lobby, go to different departments and check out photos of all the students, go and be able to contribute to write a message to the graduates in a postgraduate chat room. All these things are a work in progress right now, but our intention is to ultimately have a combination of live and pre-recorded speeches, presentations, and performances with, as mentioned by Leon, my friend and coworker of the last 14 years, Ms. Stacey A. Smith, being our commencement speaker. The 2021 school year calendar, this obviously presumes the ability to return to school, which don't mistake me as presuming that. We just have to start our planning from somewhere. Our first day of school has been settled as being off, which is 2 days after Oakland Unified and a little earlier than what we've done in the past. This shift is, in my opinion, very positive as it better aligns with OUSD, and we have many families who have kids in both the school district and at our school, and we're going to see an increase in those numbers as we're going to be serving a much greater percentage of Oakland population. And also allows semester one to end before winter break, which aligns with city colleges and also just kind of gives clean closure to that winter break so that when they return from the break, they're starting a new semester. We're going to finalize and distribute the entire calendar as soon as we get to see OUSDs. We want to align those holidays. So I apologize for the delay. I'm hopeful that having the start and end date is like the primary thing people need, but I would prefer to give it a little time and make sure we can align on all those breaks before we finalize our own calendar. In terms of preparation for next year, which I'm sure is a huge question for everyone, there is so much we don't know. What we do know is that it is very likely that one of the following three things will happen. Either we need to start with remote learning or we jump back into it at some point in the school year, or we're able to return to campus with some kind of staggered classes to reduce the number of students, or we're able, which I believe personally to be unlikely, to have a full return to campus on August 12th. What we're doing is looking into just the logistics and the basic parameters that need to be put in place to create a skeletal structure for each of those scenarios, the third one being pretty straightforward because we already know how to do that. And then working with the school leadership team is going to work with our teachers and make sure that in working through with COSATs that our teachers are represented and perspectives are shared as we develop plans. This is a very unique scenario, in my opinion, in that in a typical scenario, when you're developing, a school leadership team has extensive experience in the classroom. Given that that's not the case right now, our teachers are the experts. They know what works in remote learning. Our students are the experts, and I acknowledge that I'm doing my best to learn as much as I can, but I'm not the one on the front line, so I intend to get as much feedback from students and teachers in that design process as possible. Course registration happened. This is awesome. We are looking at having 815 students next year. Ms. Schultz has taken what was once pieces of paper and students writing things down and manually entered it into computers and converted it into a much smoother process, and she's made it happen. And that sign right there is a sign you might see in many front yards across town right now of one of our 120 soon-to-be graduates. And this one in particular was pretty cool because somebody had gone by and put a personal note on that sign. So I'm going to stop sharing there. I tried to do the quick version there. Any questions for me?
I have a question, Mr. Oz.
Sure.
Between the last survey results that you presented us and these ones, is there... Do we see an increase in any areas, decrease in any areas? I just wasn't really sure from this presentation around that.
It's almost identical.
Okay.
The comments vary, and the comments aren't something that I share publicly because we do look for people to share information that includes names, and that's confidential, of course. But I do want to say something about that. This survey was 2 weeks ago. The tone, I've had three town halls. The first one was just like, yeah, you guys are great, and that felt good, and we didn't take it for granted. We appreciated it, but we do. That doesn't necessarily last if you just keep doing what you're doing. You got to keep adjusting what you're doing to stay in that kind of status. The second one was like, yeah, you guys are doing pretty great, but we're also getting kind of tired and frustrated and we need help with this. And the one on Monday was, yes, you guys are doing a great job and we are all exhausted. And and this is just a shared sentiment. We are at our end here. Like all of us are frustrated. We have personal situations that are complicated. And I point this out, not to put any kind of doom and gloom to it, but just to acknowledge that though we've been successful in most people's eyes in terms of creating a remote learning program that worked in this situation, we need a full redesign for what this would look like in a long-term situation. We did a little get by and make this happen, and we came together as a community and we built this thing as quick as we could. And I do think it was beautiful. I loved working with the teachers on this. It was just great. And now we've got a much bigger project ahead of us. So I just want to throw that out there and let you guys know that the work is certainly not done.
Any questions from the board about it?
Thanks for continuing the great work. Again, it's far beyond what I'm aware of in other places and what my student is experiencing.
Yep, and without the teachers, so just please know that, and they are doing an amazing job.
Yeah, you may not feel good about it, Mike, but I think as we said before, it is so much better than so many places that I see.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Wait, one more question.
Sure. Go ahead.
815, is that correct?
That's what we're hoping for. That would be full grade levels. That would be the full 118-ish, 116 students per grade level, which is what we've shot for and fallen short in some of the grades in previous years.
Not a question, just another comment, just to congratulate you and the staff. I think that you all have done an amazing job with remote learning.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate that.
Any more discussion from the board? Okay, the next agenda item is mine. It's just a quick strategic plan update. So our strategic plan, we need to start thinking about it. There are big issues that are interrelated that we need to, as a board and as a community, begin thinking about. So the equity, there are four pillars of the strategic plan. There's diversity and equity, academics, art, and sustainability. And sustainability includes both fundraising and financial and facilities. It's kind of a bigger one. So I am, the equity group has started working. We have started working on the pillar. Diane, Dwayne, and I are reaching out to staff, students, some consultants about getting to work on this pillar of the strategic plan. So I am just giving the board a heads up. We'll need about 3 board members on each pillar. At the next meeting, I'm hoping to bring some kind of common understandings about how we want to work on the strategic plan. Things like the strategic plan should be based on current data, and the strategic plan should engage the community, not being too prescriptive, but really having some values around what we want this process to look like. So I am asking that board members, you start thinking about which one of those 4 pillars you would like to be on. And if you don't tell me, I'm going to ask you to email me, or you can tell me before the next board meeting. I may assign you, and then you'll have to switch with someone, like when you worked at a... Anyway, so any questions about the strategic plan? This is just the first kind of start thinking about it.
I have a question.
Yes.
Because the new next student body president will be coming on as the representative, would they align themselves in one of the committees for the strategic plan potentially, or?
Yeah, I think they could probably pick which one they wanted to be part of. I haven't thought that far ahead, but yeah, I think they could probably pick which one they wanted to be on, knowing that they all intermingle. So we can't talk about equity and not talk about academics. So they're all going to intermingle. But yeah, I think the next student rep could probably pick which one, or they could bring on multiple ones. I'm trying to be really clear at the next meeting what the commitment is for staff, for students, at least on the equity one, so that people know what they're getting into and what they're really signing up for.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or discussion?
Yeah, at least I had a couple of questions. One is just the structure of these committees. Are these committees considered board committees or ad hoc committees, or kind of like what's the formal structure of the committees? That's my first question. And my second comment is, in terms of the sustainability pillar, I would really like to put out there from the beginning that this particular pillar include a fully developed development plan as part of the official OSA strategic plan.
Great. I think that they would be ad hoc committees. They may not even be formal board committees. They could, well, since we'll have 3 board members, well, so I'll figure out, but they'd be ad hoc. They're definitely not permanent ones. And I think we would all agree, and potentially we need to break that pillar into more than one, because finances, real estate, and development may be too big for one committee. So just getting you thinking ahead about which part you'd like to be a participant of.
I don't know what happened to the Zoom itself.
Okay.
Can I ask just one quick question? So for that, is there going to be like any notification if you want to be part of this particular committee, or how is that going to be communicated?
So at the next board meeting, I'd ask you to email me. At the next board meeting, we'll figure out who's going to do what.
Okay. And just, hey, I'd like to be part of this committee or blah, blah, blah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so the structure of agendas and item-specific public comments. So at our last Brown Act...
I got to find who she is. Do you know?
In our last Brown Act meeting training, It was brought up that some of the districts or CMOs do or charter schools do is they have public comment before every item. And I think, Wei-Ling, it was you that we asked that we talk about this as our future agendas, if we'd like to have public comment before every item, as well as a public comment for items not on the agenda. So this is a discussion and input and some thoughts.
I would say that I'm strongly in favor of it. I serve on another board that allows that, and I also work with another organization that allows it, and it creates a more timely forum for getting key topics brought to the forefront.
I have a question.
I'm in favor of it as well. I'm sorry.
No, you can go, Adrian.
Oh, I'm just in favor of it as well. And Elise, we mentioned potentially taking additional public comment today. Are we still allowed public comment?
So we've taken public comment twice. I think there's one in the comments that I'm happy to email out to the whole board and read, but I'm trying really hard to stay with the agenda. So I'm happy to send that public comment to the board via an email. Or we can all read it right now in the chat.
Thank you. I'm in support of doing this moving forward.
Same here. The one question I do have about it is that if public comment was attached to each agenda item, would members of the community still be able to talk about non-agenda items during that time, or is only non-agenda items in the beginning? I just wanted, for clarifications as we're having a discussion.
Yeah, so it's usually non-agenda items as one public comment block, mm-hmm. and then the public comment is with each item. So does that answer your question?
It does, and it's still not much of a conversation as well. It's just them giving their comment, and we say thank you for sharing your comment.
Right.
Correct.
Thank you.
Elise, this is Duane. Just to clarify, what are you thinking the time, the minute allotment would be for that? Because it could be very lengthy.
Yeah.
Control it.
One of my thoughts was, in the past, we have not put time limits on public comment. I planned on timing the public comment tonight, and I couldn't get to it. So I was thinking 2 minutes.
Okay.
So I can offer this, the standards to allow 2 minutes per speaker, 4 minutes if they require translation. Right. But you can also set sort of a guideline that public comment for this agenda item won't exceed 10 minutes in total. And then you encourage folks to, if something's already been said, you encourage them to, not say it again in the interest of time. So it requires a little bit of practice to get it down right. And to Leon's point, there are members of the public that will address a particular agenda item on something that's already been discussed. You kind of need to work with them on that.
What I'm familiar with is public comments being a standard 2 to 3 minutes, but that when people sign up for a particular agenda item, if it looks like there are a lot of people on a particular agenda item, then you start limiting it. Instead of limiting the number of people, you start limiting the number of minutes per person. So you go from 3 to 2 to 1 minute, depending on the, how many people want to speak.
Any other thoughts about this?
Yes, I just wanted to say that I strongly support the structure where you have public comment after each item on the agenda. Also, since structure of agenda is part of this agenda item, I also wanted just to be able to have some clarification as to how the agendas are structured, what's the process for getting items on the agenda. I had previously requested that we have a board conversation on the committee structure and the process by which the committees operate. I know that's tied to our bylaw conversation, but I would like to see that agendized maybe for our next meeting. And then Finally, I think there needs to be some written reports tied to these agenda items, and that those written reports should also be sent in advance of the meeting. I would like us to consult with our council just to make sure we're in compliance with the Brown Act in terms of the written report distribution timeline, and that's it for me.
I'll ask council about that. Any other comments or questions or thoughts? Okay, is there any, okay. So moving forward, if there's no one with strong feelings, then we'll have the agenda items have public comment for each item.
And Elise, you'll define the structure for that, right?
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
At the next board meeting, correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I would want to say that it's my preference that it be 2 minutes per person rather than 3 minutes per person. We have a number of people who want to participate, and I think it's important to be able to hear everyone and to have the time to be able to do that.
Yeah.
That's just my thought.
Yeah, and to also have the people who are speaking at the end get the same attention as the people speaking at the beginning, if there's a lot of people talking. Okay, so we are going to move it to the finances. I believe tonight it is both CSMC and Mr. Barr, Mike, presenting this, but we are pretty clear that in the future, we don't necessarily want board members presenting, and so Mike will not be the presenter in the future.
Thank you for that. I'd also like to note that I've known you since 2004. You've never called me Mr. Barr before.
So well,
if nothing else is accomplished this evening, I finally earned her respect. Thank you.
I can't believe you know when we met.
Yes. We've got a slide. I don't know who has the slide that Susan from CSMC prepared, but I want to give a high-level overview before we show a slide. So just a recap of sort of where we've been as educators and schools over the last 7 or 8 years. We've had some pretty good years in terms of predictability. We've had very, very good insight into what our per pupil funding was going to be each year. And the normal sequence of events of a year is that the governor releases a preliminary budget in January. And it's a budget for everything in the state. Then negotiations, discussions happen, monitoring of economic conditions happen, and then a revision to that comes out in May. And typically the last few years, the numbers between January and May haven't moved much. And then the state's expected to finalize their budget by June 30th. That's how things have been that's what's expected to happen. The last 5 or 6, 7 years, the numbers haven't moved much between January, May, and June. We are in very, very different times right now. We are entering into, next year will be year one of, I would estimate at least 3 years of very, very difficult school funding in California. Before COVID happened, the estimates that we were looking at for the change in per pupil funding this year was about 2.25%, which is basically an estimate of COLA. So we were, for every student that came, we would get 2.25% more than we get the prior year. As of the governor's press conference today, that we are now expecting a 10% decrease in per pupil funding. So we have a lot of things to digest. We have a lot of modeling to do. We have a lot of things to think about as we move through these, frankly, unprecedented times. We know that we will be impacted in terms of the amount we get per pupil. The other thing we know will certainly happen is we will get our money later than we normally do. There will be what's called deferrals. The state has a published schedule of when you get your money from them, and when the economy goes bad, they don't honor that. The worst year we had, I think, was 2009, when during the year we got 70 cents of every dollar we earned. So we got to do a lot of modeling around that. We got to do a lot of thinking around that. The numbers that came out today that indicated a 10% decrease in per pupil funding are the best estimate as of today. that number could go down. We don't know. The expectation is that we will not have final budget numbers from the state probably until August. So they will not get to the 6:30 deadline. So I want to give that high level overview and then let Adrian or the folks from CSMC offer any other commentary on that before I sort of show, you know, the high level modeling that we've been doing.
Mm-hmm. Hi everyone, Susan from CSMC. Mike, I think you prefaced it beautifully. I know we've been running many scenarios based on a lot of unknowns at this point. Just earlier today, the governor came out and finally gave, you know, his May revision, and a lot of that is big numbers. So now over the course of the next couple of days, we'll really start to see what the impact is for us as a school individually. For example, a new funding calculator will come out hopefully by early next week, and that will really give us the tools to run the numbers based on your projected ADA, knowing what that funding will look like. So it's still a little bit of a mystery at this point, but we have run, I mean, just know that your finance committee has been running a whole slew of models just trying to prepare for what next year might look like.
Thank you for that. So now I want to remind the board of what we've done over the last few years. And I want to thank when Jonathan Faustian came in, he helped to get us in a predictable budget cycle as the board. And what that cycle looked like was we would approve the budget for the year in June. We have the Ed Code requires us, California Education Code requires us to approve a budget by June 30th. What we were able to do is we were able to give a first preview in April of each year, and then a update that was a little more sharpened. We tightened some things down by May, and then bring a package for final board approval in June. We're still marching towards the June. We've got so much uncertainty that all we have at this point are some very high level projections on a couple scenarios we've been running. So we're continuing to work. We're likely going to have, you know, more frequent finance committee meetings as we move towards getting more information and using that information to help understand what decisions we have to make as a board. Mm-hmm. So are there any questions on sort of the macro level stuff or the process from here before I ask whoever has that Susan slide to?
I have it.
I can share.
Okay. Also,
are there any questions first? I just want to give folks an opportunity. Okay. So if whoever was volunteering to.
Kimberly, share, you ready? Either one of us can do it. There you go. Thanks, Kimberly.
So there's a few things that I want to point out here. So we had, again, we were modeling as of, you know, 8 weeks ago, we were modeling an increase in per pupil funding of about 2.25%. We now have boiled it down to two scenarios. One is a 5% cut in per pupil funding. That's what you see in column B here, and a 10% cut in per pupil funding. There was a second version of the 5% one, but it became moot at noon today when the governor released his information. So for the board's edification, I want to just anchor on a few high-level numbers. As Mike Oz shared a few minutes ago, projected enrollment of 815. That translates to an ADA number. ADA is average daily attendance. If every kid comes to school every single day, then our ADA would be 815 and enrollment of 815, but because kids come 96% of the time or whatever the math works out to be, the ADA drives our funding. I want the board to park in your heads a number. Each kid, each ADA is worth about 10 grand, 10, 11 grand each year. We generally don't face enrollment issues. We are fortunate enough to have a high demand and a wait list. And frankly, 815 is maxing out the facilities that we have. So we're modeling both scenarios with those numbers. What's currently in these projections is $900,000 in projected fundraising revenue. So a couple things I want the board to anchor on is that the budget we had this year was $1.1 million or $1.2 million of fundraising. We're going to come in about half of that. We're going to come in lower than expected this year. We had some insight into that. It shared at a prior meeting prior to COVID. We've actually had, frankly, a little more success than others have during COVID with closing a couple of deals. But this is a number that we're going to need to work on. And to Josefina's point a few minutes ago, we really need to, you know, have a detailed fundraising plan for the organization so we can understand, is this the right number? But that's the numbers you see here are both driven with $900,000 projected fundraising next year. You can see we've got a change in per pupil funding that's just reflected there. The LCFF revenue number there, LCFF is local control funding formula. That's basically the money we get from the state. I will pause for a second and say that there are some rumblings that some of the impact we feel from the state could be mitigated by some additional federal dollars over and above what you've already heard about through the CARES Act and the PPP loan and some other things. There's not clarity on that right now. So this is based on what we know now. When people hear about a 5% change or a 10% change, I want to call your attention to line 14. So every 1% swing up or down will be about $65,000 to OSA. So if you hear that 10% became 12%, you take the 65,000 multiplied by two, we have another $130,000 to solve for. I'm trying to just get some high level metrics so we can sort of walk through this together. If we look at, so what we're currently modeling to get to the numbers here, again, this is just a model. This is the first exercise, is a step increase for teaching staff and no increase in pay for non-teaching staff. The other sort of variable that we have to play with here is if we change FTE, how does that benefit us? And the each FTE change would be, if we add an FTE, it would increase expenses by about $73,000. If we decrease one, it would decrease by $73,000. As we think about if we were to start toggling line 16 and 18, which is the change in pay for teaching and non-teaching staff, another thing for the board to consider is that every 1% change we make there would cost us about $79,000, as shown here. So these two models show the current deficits of some very massive amounts, $750,000 and $1.1 million respectively. Again, these were updated today based on what we learned from the governor today. We have a lot more work to do to see what we can do to balance it. I want to remind the board that we passed a resolution last year that we would maintain organizational reserves at 10% of operating expenses. So when we think about dials we can turn, that's a dial we can turn. To the question that Jeremy Taylor asked earlier, we do have large fund balance, but that's not reserves we can use to pay the bills, because a lot of it has to do with some accounting that was done a number of years ago. And I'll apologize again, I'm past due in creating an analysis that clarifies that for the board. But the key takeaway here is that based on the models we've done, we have a lot of work to do to get a balanced budget. And we framed it the way we did so you could sort of see what some of the levers are and some of the dials that we can turn. The dials we can't turn are the state economy. The dials we can't turn are the federal economy. The dials we can't turn are, I guess those are the two biggest ones. So I just wanted to give a snapshot of where we are, and I'll pause here for questions from the board or any additional commentary from Susan or Maria or anybody else.
Mike, can I add that from my point of view, the 5% loss scenario is no longer applicable?
I believe that died at noon today.
Yes. I just want to make it clear to everyone that we are truly looking at the 10%. Mm-hmm. And I also just want to add that I'll feel much more comfortable when the actual funding calculator comes out, because right now these are just kind of taking your estimates in the calculator and then using our own kind of percent decreases. So, you know, that should happen early next week, and I'll feel more comfortable with the numbers once that comes out. Just want to point that out.
Thanks, Susan.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Mike, do you mind repeating what the prior year to today fundraising was? You said it went from 1.1 million to almost 500,000.
So I should probably let Kimberly answer this. Our budget for the year that we're in now was either 1.1 or 1.2. I don't remember, but the actual results for this year are going to be about 600 grand.
Right. And what was the year before?
I do not know.
I think the year before that our goal was 1,035,000. So it's just a little over 1,000,000.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This that's being presented right now, this is just based off of ADA, correct?
Yes. Well, it's there's other things that factor into the amount we get than number of fee reduced lunch kids we have and other dynamics. But ADA is the overwhelmingly large driver.
Okay.
This includes all of your revenue. So all your federal revenue, your SB 740 rent reimbursement, your special ed income, everything is included in this deficit, basically.
Yes, yeah. that's a more eloquent way of saying it.
Thank you, Susan. Sure.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What other questions does the board have?
Point of clarification. This document was created today because you're trying to address just to keep ahead of what's going on. So this is something that is a revision that was created today.
Yeah, the version we had a couple days ago was prior to the governor's May revision to the budget, and it had a couple of negative 5% scenarios and one 10% scenario. The negative 5% scenario, again, died at noon.
Yeah. We did everything from 0% optimistic thinking to negative 5, you know, negative 5 different scenarios, negative 10. I mean, we really have been looking at kind of across the board trying to predict what might actually be the case. And then as of today, we really feel like the 10% is going to be the closest guess as of tonight where that might be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else? More to come.
Mm-hmm. So, Mike, trying to end on an optimistic note, what could be the upsides? Where could we potentially get positive news? I think one of them is potentially if we, go ahead.
Yeah, so there's a few buckets there. I referred already to potential federal help. These numbers are not unique. There are school boards across the country looking at similar schedules right now. California's 10%, other states are more, or other states are less. So there's a lot to figure out. So there could be additional federal assistance that will help us. We could choose to use a higher fundraising number next year that would help mitigate the deficit. If we took it from 900 to 1.3 million, then all of a sudden you've cut $400,000 off the deficit and we're going in the right direction. There's not a lot of fat in the organization. There's not a lot of fat in the school, but the finance committee and staff needs to work with CFMC and others to understand what additional reductions can we make in expenses. When you add up salaries and facilities and special ed, you pretty much spent 90%+ of your budget for a school. There's not a ton of discretionary things. There's not a lot of money there, but we're going to continue to scour that. We could also get good news, later in the year. So one of the things that we're going to bring forward to you in June is a budget for your approval, along with two lists. One is a list of things that we will invest in if we get good news, and the other is a list of things that we will cut if we get more bad news. It's always better to be in a position to not have to make mid-year cuts. It's better to have thought about them at the time the budget is approved. And it's easier to put things back in if you're trying to do what we used to when we went through this back in 2008, 2009, 2010 at Aspire Public Schools. We tried to stay one step ahead of the state, and that's what we're going to try to do here. So if the state set a certain amount, we would try and budget for assuming a little bit worse than that. We were right many times in a row, unfortunately. So we need to continue to scrub the numbers. We need to be prudent. We need to understand what's realistic from a fundraising perspective. And those are the primary dials that we can turn. Mm-hmm.
There was a question about, I saw just briefly about ADA, and just to say that your school's attendance rate was frozen early as of the end of February before kind of the COVID happened. So you're freezing, your funding is secure obviously through the end of this year. I think there's a little bit of question still, and I don't know if Mike, if you've heard anything about attendance and ADA and what that looks like going forward. Now you'll be funded on this P2 ADA well into next year. So your funding is secure in that sense, if that answers that question.
Yeah, I don't have anything further to add to that.
Okay.
And then this also assumes that we start school not remotely.
Yeah, that's another thing that, frankly, there could be upside. If kids are remote and we're not turning on the power of the building, we've got to do some other side analysis of how our expense structure changes in a remote learning model. We just haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah. Got it.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you all. Stay tuned. The next item, am I okay to go to the next item, Elise?
Yep.
Okay. So what date was it? It was the 7th, I believe, the 6th or the 7th. We had a board meeting and agreed that we would accept the terms of the PPP loan as presented to us from Bank of America.
Summit Bank.
Summit Bank, I'm sorry. Sorry, I got another call I need to be on in 5 minutes. This is with Bank of America, so my apologies. So we executed the documents with Summit Bank, and what we agreed to as a board was that unless we decided to rescind our decision, which we have until today to do, then the loan documents would stand. The reason that we gave ourselves that out is there was a lack of clarity from the Small Business Administration about what it means to qualify to get these funds, and there was Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, actually publicly said that there would be criminal time and criminal charges for fraud under this. So what's happened since then is a couple really good things. Number one, OSA is unique amongst many other charter schools in that we have an identifiable loss of revenue because of COVID. We have an identifiable loss of revenue from rental income for people that rent a couple of our facilities. We have an identifiable loss of revenue from shows that aren't going to happen from which we would have gotten revenue. So we already had a good case going in. And then yesterday morning or late the night before, the SBA issued guidance that lowered blood pressure for a couple hundred thousand nonprofits across the country, where they said that if you receive the funds and a subsequent audit indicates that you actually didn't meet the criteria to get the funds, which still are not clear, but if that happened, the worst case scenario is you would have to pay the loan back. So what we have done is we have executed the loan documents. It is a loan until such time as it becomes something other than a loan. We will work very, very hard to identify expenses and charge to this and use it for those purposes so that hopefully a large chunk of this will be forgiven. But we will not know that answer until we are into the next budget year. So tonight's topic is an update and not an action item because we're letting stand the decision was already made. And frankly, the funds were in our account as of the 11th, Monday morning. If none of it's forgiven, it's extremely attractive cash flow borrowing. It's 1% interest paid back over 24 months, starting 6 months from now. Any questions?
Thanks, Mike. Sounds like we made the right call when we had to last week.
Yeah, I was very confident of that before Wednesday morning and extremely confident as of Wednesday morning.
Okay, on that note, if there's no more discussion, then we have gone through the whole agenda. And I am declaring the meeting adjourned. And we're done. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Elise. Thank you, board.
Thank you. Yeah,
thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Elise. Thanks, all.
For attending.
Bye, everyone.
Well.
Thank you, Elise.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.